This is the weekend edition of the Daily Gold Podcast, covering precious metals and global capital markets for intelligent investors. Now, here is your host, Jordan Roy Byrne.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Daily Gold Podcast. Thank you for joining me for this episode. And today I'm interviewing a new guest. His name is David Earfley. He is a Kitco contributor, and he has been a self-directed investor in the precious metals sphere for 15 years. Dave, thanks so much for coming on. How are you today?
Pretty good, Jordan. How are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm great. Yeah. And first off, I saw you at the Sprott Symposium that was held not this past week, but the previous week. And you go to many of these conferences. You've been involved in the industry as an investor slash speculator for many years, as I said in my intro. From being at the conference, what kind of feel did you get for how the more serious investors, how are they looking at things right now, given the huge rebound that we've had? That just seems to go on and on.
Well, a few of them that I talked to, they were almost like in shock, because I think because they got burned so badly during the vicious bear market, and a lot of them have not even committed to being in the sector yet, and some of them are a little bit, but they're not fully committed because they're scared. They're just because we just had so many drops, consolidations. It was cut in half so many times that they're just scared. And they are optimistic, but they're just waiting. They're waiting for this correction that doesn't seem to come. And I just don't think that the retail market has really taken place yet in this market. I don't think the retail end of it has really gotten in yet.
So what do you think it's going to take for them to get in? Do you think maybe if the market keeps moving up here, we might see some capitulation on their part? And what kind of stocks do you think retail will be buying? Are they going to go into the larger juniors or even the majors? I mean, what kind of effect do you think retail could have on this market over the next couple months?
Yeah, that's a good question. I really don't think that they're going to go into the small cap, the micro cap Explorcos yet. I think when they start to dip their toe in, I think they're gonna go into majors and mid tiers, maybe some development plays, but definitely not the more riskier micro caps, I don't think. From the mood that I got, they're just waiting to get into, you know, your First Majestics, your New Golds, your IM Golds, you know, your basically well-known mid caps and of that ilk, companies like that.
Right, and now you personally, you remain very bullish on this sector. You've had some great editorials coming out the last couple of weeks. You had a great one about West Africa. Maybe we can talk about that towards the end of this interview. But why don't you just talk about your editorial this week, what you wrote about, and kind of your thoughts on the sector here going forward.
Yeah, I took it from the mood at the show. I mean, I opened the piece with one of the keynote speakers coming out and saying that he sold all of his gold stocks the Friday previous to the conference. And he told everybody to go into China, sell all your gold stocks, go into China. And I could feel the collective groan in the crowd. And he even said himself that Rick Rule's going to kill me for saying this. But I just think this move is finished. And if you're even going to come back in, don't get back in until at least 3 months from now. So when I hear something like that at a conference that was sold out, and the mood was very upbeat from the attendees to hear somebody come out and say something like that. It just gives me pause to think that there's really going to be that 25 to 35% correction that everybody's waiting for right here, especially since we got strong seasonality coming up. August and September are typically very good months for gold. And with what's happening with the negative real rates all over Europe, the negative interest rates, I just don't, and the GLD inflows just keep going up. There was another 4 tons added yesterday. It's up to 973 tons now. So I just don't see where all this selling is going to come from. And then today we had a very surprising non-farms payrolls report that was much better than everyone expected. And the precious metal shares, which normally get hammered on something like that, just yawned at it. There was hardly any volume. A lot of companies like McEwen Mining, who've had an incredible run, just went down about 8 or 9%, and then in half an hour, it was only down like 2 or 3%. It was bought up. So I don't see any sense of urgency to sell on short-term bad news. I just see weakness being bought no matter what.
Yeah, great points. I mean, I personally tend to agree with you. Let's take a step back, because your article on West Africa a couple weeks ago, that received a lot of acclaim, at least in among some of the people that I talk to, some of the circles that I partake in. Why don't you go over that and talk about the opportunities in West Africa without naming kind of the smaller companies? Maybe naming some of the bigger ones is okay.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, I've always liked the geology there, and the fact that it's extremely underexplored. I mean, modern exploration hasn't really gone on there. It's only gone on there in the past 15 years. So there's a lot there. There's a lot that to get out of the ground, and the political situation that was going on there the last couple of years, where the leader of the country was in power for like 27 years, and decided, hey, I think I'll amend the Constitution and stick around a little longer. Well, the people didn't like it very much, so. They started a riot, and he did the intelligent thing and decided to step down, and then somebody else took over from the military, and then there was another coup, and it was very interesting, because all this was taking place as the precious metals miner sector was trying to bottom. So when this new government started to take over, the bottom had been met. In the precious metal shares, it was bottoming for about 6 months while all this was taking place, and the government was stabilizing. So you had just an incredible opportunity there with the timing issue, where the country really relies on mining. It's like 20% of their GDP, more than 20% of their GDP is from gold mining, and it's very easy to permit. The taxes are really low. It's just very mining friendly, and the new guy in power has ties to the old one, wherein he's keeping everything status quo, meaning he's keeping it mining friendly. And there's been like 9 or 10 gold mines that have been started up there in the past, 6 or 7 years. Everything's fast tracked. I mean, they want the revenue. So companies like Semafo have done really well there. Endeavor Mining has now got two mines in there. They took over the Marco de True Gold company, and now they've started their own Hyundai mine, which is going to be their flagship once it's built, super low cost. and Semafo, like I said, it took out another company that which had two great projects, one which is going to be in production in a couple years, and another which has great potential. And now a third mid-tier has gone in there, and that's Teranga, who has the only mill and mine in Senegal, and now they've made a bid for a company called Griffin Gold in Australia. And if that goes through, it's going to raise their reserves 70%, and they'll have another 3 million ounce project in a different company with some risk diversification there. And this deposit looks really, really good. And they've also got two other deposits that came with that they can explore on top of their already huge land package in Senegal. So there's a couple companies that I really have high hopes in that are in Burkina Faso now.
Right. And speaking of Senegal, that's a good segue. Did you follow that recent news release? I think Randgold is investing $70 million in Senegal.
$70 million, right.
Can you add any color to that?
Yeah, I mean, their operations are right next to Teranga's. That's a very fertile area there. And I know IM Gold's got some operations there too. So, and I noticed that Randgold's had a couple of consecutive quarters that weren't so great, and their share price doesn't look very good right now. So I wouldn't be surprised if they're, you know, looking to add some ounces. And if they were to look to add some ounces, I mean, Teranga would be a no-brainer because they've got the only mill in Senegal. So why build one where you just buy one out that's really undervalued? Teranga is still very undervalued. I think their marketing is a lot to be desired. Their IR team is not very good. Not a lot of people have heard of Teranga.
Right. And, I'll just mention, I mean, number one, I mean, there's, as you mentioned, there's major mining companies such as Randgold, and I guess IM Gold is not quite a major. But when major companies are in these areas, you know that they're legitimate. I mean, it's one thing to go to these types of countries where Westerners probably perceive business there to be very difficult. But, I mean, if the major companies are there, then you know that the potential and the politics are legitimate, or at least legitimate enough for them to do their business. And in addition
exactly.
to that, in addition yeah. to that, Dave, and I know you agree, I mean, and I learned this from Joe Mazumdar. I want to give him credit when he gave a presentation at the Metals Investor Forum in May, and I've had him on here before, where he's talking about when you're looking for quality assets, jurisdiction is less important. It's always important, but many companies are willing to go to difficult areas if the asset is top-notch. And, I mean, West Africa, it's not really a difficult area compared to, you know, other parts of the world. I mean, can you speak on any of that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I agree 100%. And look at what Nevsun just did. This is a company that has its only operations in one of the riskiest places in the world, in Eritrea. And they wanted to diversify their risk a little. So where did they go? They went into Serbia and bought Reservoir Minerals deposit, which is an incredible deposit, but it's in Serbia. So that's exactly the point that Mazumdar was making, that if the project is that good, the jurisdiction really doesn't matter that much.
Right. Okay. And, before we close, you know, we're not giving advice here, but, you know, what kind of, if you were in the position of, like, let's just say a lot of investors out there who they've probably missed the bulk of this move, or maybe they're not 100% invested, maybe they're only 50% invested. If you were in that situation, what would you do? I mean, would you look for just buy the stocks that you like that are correcting and are showing weakness? I mean, I know it's kind of a difficult question, but I mean, any thoughts on that? Because there's probably some people in the audience who are in that predicament.
Yeah, well, it all depends on your risk tolerance, you know. And I would assume, since they're not in this market yet, then they're not very risk averse. So I would say buy quality mid tiers that have corrected, and maybe a few development plays with deposits that are over 2 million ounces that have a great management team and a good share float, and preferably in a country with a weak currency like Australia or Canada. And I would, if you're going to dip into the microcap sector, which I would highly recommend, but you really have to do your due diligence. If you're going to do that, I would say buy at least four or five of them and put equal amounts in all five of them. And all it would take is for one to hit, and it would cover up the losses if the four turned out to be duds. So I think that's what I'd do. I'd still wouldn't touch a major. I don't like investing in majors. There's just too much that can go wrong with a huge company with so much overhead and so much staff, and there's just so many mistakes that could be made. Things like what Coeur d'Alene did by not even upping their claims at Rochester, and just stupid things like that. But then again, look at Coeur d'Alene. Now it's gone from $1.50 to $15. So what do I know? But anyway, I just think there's more upside in mid tiers and juniors and micro caps here.
Right, and I mean, I've kind of thought that the gold mining business in general, especially from the top end, is really a Ponzi scheme. If you think about it, I mean, it's a geological Ponzi scheme. But I've talked to some people, and they're like, yeah, that's absolutely true.
You're right. That's a good way to put it. And you have to minimize your risk. And if you're gonna go the separate company route and not go the ETF route. In other words, if you're going to try to do it the hard way, like I do, then you really have to spread out your risk. I mean, I'd like to have at least 20 to 25 companies, because I don't want to put any more than 3 to 5% into one company, because anything could happen. I don't care where the gold mine is. You know, it could be in Nevada, and there's nothing around. You don't have to worry about permitting because Nevada is a great place to permit. You don't have to worry about the EPA because there's nothing around there to protect. And then anything could happen. Like the mine could cave in. I mean, anything could happen. I mean, gold mining is the riskiest business in the world. So it's up to you to minimize your risk by trying to keep as little amount of your portfolio into one company as possible.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'll just reiterate what you said. If you're going to speculate on the micro caps, I mean, those types mm-hmm. of companies, which we agree, that's really where the best value is. But what you said...
Oh, yeah, absolutely, right now, yeah.
What you said is so important. Spread your risk around among you know, a basket or a handful of those stocks. I mean, there's so many of those companies out there. Sift through a list of them and spread your risk around what you think are the three or the five best, depending on the size of your portfolio. Don't just put money in everything and don't just put money in one or two. And at the same time, not to give self-promotion here, but it's good to subscribe to someone who follow these companies and can give you some guidance on that front. I mean, don't just subscribe to one person, subscribe to a couple people, because if you do your own research, you get some guidance from people who are giving you good, honest research and analysis, then you can really sift through these and find a good small basket where the odds of success mm-hmm. are going to be much higher.
Right, and there's something else I'd like to add if you're gonna go that route, and also at these conferences and when you hear these experts give you stock tips, you have to be very wary because they're out to make a buck just like everybody else. So I wouldn't pay attention to analysts that analyst stock picks that they give you, I would pay attention to how the analysts pick those stocks. And basically, don't buy their free fish. Listen to how they teach you how to fish. That's the best way to do it, because I've seen a lot of these guys pump these stocks that they've probably been in for a long time. You know, they got in early. They want to take their profit. They're still a good company, so they're not deceiving you. It is a good company, but as far as where they are in the cycle, they could be topping out, and they want to take some of their money off the table, so they want to get the best price. You know, I'm not saying that all these guys are dishonest or anything. I'm just saying that this is how the business works. You know, if you're getting free advice, take it for what it is, free advice.
Absolutely, and I'll just throw in there, I mean, granted, I'm just thinking about the times I've spoken at PDAC, I think 2012 and 2014, and granted, we were in a bear market then. I mean, the stock picks that I gave out have done terrible, to be honest. No, you're absolutely right. But at the last conference I said, the last time I was there, 2014, I said, this is the most important thing that I will say and probably anybody else will say. So pay attention. Then everybody looked at me and I said, sell anything if it goes down 20%.
Yeah,
that was and you know, that only cost me in December, where there was one stock I had that went down 20%. I mean, it's only cost me one time on the other side. But really, I mean, that
right.
Because if you took anyone's stock, if you took anyone's stock pick there, you know, you sold the ones that went down 20%, those were, you know, those would probably be some of the top performing portfolios as far as 2014
right.
to 2015.
You can't hold on
to these things and let losses spiral out of control. I just wanted to echo what you were saying about stock picks.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. Yes.
Yeah. Anything else you want to add? I think I had one other thought to chime in, but it left my mind.
Well, I don't think so. I just think that people who are in should stay the course. Don't get emotional and panic out, because we've got a long way to go. And if you've got core positions that you've taken in the past 6 months, hold on to them for until this cycle matures. You know, it's going to be a crazy ride, but if you hold on to the things that you purchased in the past 6 months, you're going to be very happy in 2, 3, 4 years' time.
Absolutely, I agree with you. Dave, thanks so much for joining us today. When will your next article be out? Well, late next week?
Next Friday, every Friday. If I have something to write about. If I don't, then I don't send in anything. But every Friday, usually. Thank you.
All right, and that will be on kitco.com. Dave, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Jordan. It was a pleasure.